This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge. I am your host, Amy Nelson, and with me this week in the same city, Patrick Devlin. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Amy. How are you? Yeah, you're actually in my city. Well, close to it anyway.
Yeah.
And so first things first, how has your week been in New York?
I have loved this amazing city. I have felt safe, wonderful food, amazing tourist things to see, amazing Trek people to visit and meet for the first time. It truly was my pleasure to meet you, Patrick, in person. And thank you so much for hosting me to your house and your family. I love your family. Your wife is the best.
Oh, you just like the fact that she likes it 30 degrees in the, 80 degrees in the room.
Yes. Man, she gives you crap and it's just exactly what you need.
Oh, she was being nice that night. Yeah, she does. She definitely does. And to think that's a day before my 10-year anniversary.
Oh my gosh, I know.
But I'm glad you enjoyed the city. I noticed you did take my advice on a few things, like you went to the Museum of Natural History. What'd you think of that?
Oh, I really need a couple days there. We got there a little late because I just took my time in the morning. And so we got there and my ticket even included one with the big planetarium show. Yep. That was narrated by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yep.
And that was amazing. Yeah, it was so, so good. And the exhibits are so well done. I just needed more time there.
Well, I've been going there. We used to do, class trips there throughout elementary school. And my favorite room, you guys took a picture of, but my favorite room was the one with the giant blue whale.
Uh-huh.
I love that room.
Yeah.
It actually featured on How I Met Your Mother. Barney supposedly knocks it down.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
But that's one of my favorite places on the planet. So,
yeah.
I guess you'll have to come back to New York because there's so many more things for you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and met some of the listeners that are here locally. So that was great too. Had dinner with them. And hi, Mark, my negative Nelly, and yeah, Robert Joseph, and Chris Littlefield.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to meet either Mark or Robert because I was stuck at work till late. But I did get to meet Chris and Laz. So
yes,
that was cool. And that was the first time I met you. I met them at the same time. So
yeah. Yeah, it's all good. So glad to be here. Sad to go back and get back to real life and be Miss Nelson again.
Yeah, well, one of us has to be working. I got to go on vacation soon.
Oh my gosh, I know. Disney.
Yes, flying down, going on a cruise, coming, staying at the hotel one more day and then coming on home.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to that last part.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen, we're not here to talk about my travels or your travels. We had a season 2 finale. Season 2 is now done. And so, Patrick, real quick, because we're going to get into it, I'm sure, quite in-depthly. Just real quick, your initial thoughts of this episode.
The visuals of this episode are amazing. This was very much high-quality movie visuals, right? The only problem I have is I want them, it feels like the writers are trying to appease two different groups in their episode, where they're leaving things to be determined at the end, right? But at the same time, they're kind of giving you the answer. And I didn't like that. But other than that, I thought Most of the writing was good. Again, the character development. This writing crew knows how to do character development. And they did a great job with Culber in this episode and a few other things. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for a finale. I enjoyed the visuals a lot. We'll get into that, though, because I think Pike's going to get some credit for something he doesn't deserve in this episode from you. And So overall, I enjoyed it. I wish they wouldn't have made the decisions they did at the end.
Okay, so I have seen it twice now, and both times, I don't know if you noticed or watched the end credits with the music, like the score to this episode was so moving, and the way that they had the music come in at certain times just really added to like the story and the character development and the suspense of it all and the action of it all. But those end credits where they had the Discovery and the TOS main theme throughout, it was a beautiful dance. And watching it with Chris Littlefield, because he's in the music industry here in New York City, just accentuated it, and it just made my heart so happy to have these two music themes come so beautifully together. So I wanted to for sure mention that. I really enjoyed, yes, definitely the character development, and like you, the special effects in this were amazing. The angles of the ships and the wide angles, so we get to see a big perspective, and the tight angles of the shuttles flying around, and it was quite spectacular, the whole action part of it. I think last episode was... it didn't have a lot of action. So there was this episode made up for that. So,
yeah, I would agree. I think you cheated a little bit by using a ringer and Chris to figure out the music stuff. But I'm not big into the music of things in general. But I did notice the last two episodes, the musical scores have been very well done, very mm-hmm. well placed.
Yeah.
I couldn't explain any of it out. So it's just not my forte. as far as the lack of action in the last episode. Yeah, the first parts of... and we talked about this. I talked about this last week with Chris Tribuzio. It's weird because none of these should ever feel like two-parters because the whole story is supposed to be continuing each and every week. However, these two distinctly feel like a two-parter in episodic television. Even though three episodes ago flows right into the last episode, which flows right into this one, it was clear that this story was written for this two episodes together, and then they tied it in to the main season.
Yeah, it definitely was. I was reading an article by Olatunde that he was being interviewed, and he definitely, like when he was filming, you know, the 13th and then the 14th, like he wanted them to have two distinct feelings, but it was one story. And it just had to be broken down because so much had to be tied up. But he did with the types of, and we can talk more to Mike Schindler about this, and he can illuminate us on the different types of filming and size of angles or whatever, but he did try and make the episodes feel distinct. However, they were one episode.
Yeah, and part. One, you know, episode 13, part one, obviously sets up part two. You know,
yeah.
Whereas that's what I mean by like, it's weird because in this kind of storytelling, every episode is supposed to set up another episode, but these are just distinct from the other 12.
Right.
As you really shouldn't be able to go back and watch any individual episode, but you really can't do it with these two.
Right. For sure.
You know, you'd be completely lost if you watched part two and never saw part one.
Yeah.
And more so than just grabbing a random episode out of the season. But other than that, I mean, whatever, that's a writing choice, and it done well. I mean, the story that goes from the end of 12 to the end of 14, I think is good. You know, there was a few things maybe I didn't like in it, but the story itself and where it moved and where we ended up is good. Again, there's just one part we'll get to at the end that I just don't like that they made a choice to do.
Okay. Well, let's get into, I think, the best part of this episode, the whole action and the battle and with Leland. Like, It was amazing. Like I mentioned before, like you see the Enterprise and Discovery completely surrounded, you know, well, sort of from last week and now this week. And, you know, and then we get the cavalry arriving, right? We get Laurel coming back and Serana in the Ba'ul ships. I thought that was really interesting to bring Serana back in a Ba'ul ship, because to me, that added closure that it's like those two species on Kaminar are now functioning well together. Like, well, I'm assuming, I guess we could think that the Kelpians destroyed the Ba'ul and took their technology, but I'm going to choose not to believe that, that they're working together and that Serana comes in and, you know, learns how to fly these ships and accepts the technology. And we get a little bit of closure by seeing her on screen.
So I'm usually the eternal pessimist here. It didn't even cross my mind that they killed off all the Ba'ul and stole their ships. I did, however, say while I was watching, I'm like, so I'm supposed to believe they're automatically allies now? Like, it just doesn't seem like enough time has passed for that to be true. But I think that's what they were going for, that, you know, we had the speech from Serana at the end of that episode, how they're going to be different, this, that, and the other thing. And, okay, she's just the leader of one town or village on the planet, but apparently she's speaking for the whole planet. And I choose to believe, because especially since I didn't even think of them killing all the Ba'ul, that they are now allies. I think they could have really nailed that home. I mean, I guess they did by giving them the Ba'ul ships, but they could have nailed it home by just having one Ba'ul in a ship somewhere talking. And then there'd be no questions.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary, but it could have happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Skipped ahead, because before that, before we get to the, by the way, when Laurel showed up, I guess I was like half out of it the first time I watched it. The whole thing goes, you get the green like fuzz.
Yeah.
And my wife goes, what is that? It didn't even dawn on me that it would be a decloaking ship at first. I was like, I don't know. It looks like they're tearing space time. Oh, Klingons. What I don't understand about that is how come they didn't see the Ba'ul before the Klingons decloaked?
Because they arrived at the same time. What do you mean before?
Because they see the Klingons and they're like, are those Ba'ul ships? Like as if they were cloaked as well.
No, because they came in at the same time.
I guess you'd see them coming though.
Well, yeah, they're like, we have signatures coming in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they saw them coming in. But then when the decloak, and I just loved it because last episode, you know, I was so wondering what Tyler is saying. Well, do you trust me? And then he's like, well, I have something to do. And so then he goes and gets Laurel, which I think is brilliant. However, .. Tyler's supposed to be dead. Did not Laurel hold up the head of Tyler and her baby and said, they are dead. I call me mother.
Oh, you mean
mother.
To the Klingons?
Yes.
Yeah, well, this just goes back to my whole how evil of a statement was, the dead have no rights. I mean, unless we need it for story points.
Yeah, so that was my only issue, is that now Tyler's on a Klingon ship. I love that they brought it in, and I loved the scene where Tyler is standing and watching Michael go through, and well, it's later in the conversation, but he's watching through, and then Laurel sort of comes up behind him, and she can see the effect that Michael leaving has on Tyler. I just thought that was brilliant. I thought that she was being supportive and a friend, but also sort of feeling her loss that she knows that Tyler loves Michael and not her. I thought that played very, very well.
I like that scene a lot too. Although I'm surprised that your TNG heart hasn't already brought up the fact that they both at different times say, today is a good day to die.
Yes! It made me think of Richard, my co-host on Earl Grey. He ends the show every time screaming that line. And yes, I cheered. I was clapping and, yeah, fist pumping. It was great.
I loved it. And I love the fact that we got it in Klingon.
Yes.
Not in English, which was so good.
I love that they were speaking Klingon. It was so much more natural, because whenever Laurel speaks English, it sounds terrible and it just flows so naturally. So I love that they still are speaking Klingon and having the subtitles with it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I guess I'm glad I don't have to read the whole episodes all the time when they're talking to Federation, but I like when they speak Klingon. I just, like you, I think it sounds more natural, which is odd because it's a completely unnatural language. But, you know, they obviously did their homework and they've really built this into a real language, which we've been talking about for two seasons now.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds good to the ear.
Yeah, it does. And what did you think about Poe coming in and, I'm taking diplomatic immunity and you can't charge me for stealing your ship, but I'm here. And I thought that was so cute. And but she gave needed information that in order to destroy the Section 31 ships, you have to come from both sides, like this port and the starboard. Otherwise, you're just shooting from one angle and it's not going to do anything because of their advanced shielding, which we know Section 31 and Leland has seriously advanced the technology of Section 31 way beyond what anyone previously knew about Section 31.
Oh, you're foreshadowing.
Yes, I am.
I still don't buy it. And I like that. I enjoyed Poe. I guess that the Federation uses the United States diplomatic immunity clauses. I didn't know that. Because it seems like no other planet does, right? Every time someone in anywhere in Star Trek goes somewhere, like, they get arrested and they're about to be killed because apparently we don't have diplomatic immunity anywhere else in the galaxy or the universe.
Yeah, but just offer it. We don't expect to receive it.
Apparently not. But, it was a cool scene. I like her. It was funny. I don't know if it's necessary for her to say it, but I think it was funny and it was well placed.
Well, you know, I think she was the right character to identify, because who else would say it that would make sense, I guess.
Right, well, that's what I mean. Like, it doesn't sound, it's not necessary, but it doesn't sound wrong.
Right.
If that makes sense. You know, like, she could have just went into her explanation of how to destroy them, and it would have worked just as well. But I think, you know, at that moment, breaking it up with a little bit of humor was good.
Yeah. Okay, so I did notice there was only one time when the camera angles spun us around. It was at the beginning, and I rolled my eyes.
It happened like half of the episode.
No. There was only one spinning of the camera angle. What was other spinning that I'm totally fine with was Commander Nan and Georgiou fighting with Leland and how the gravity was malfunctioning. And so they were fighting on the walls, fighting on the ceiling, and it just went around. And that, again, like reading Olatunde's article or interview that he did and how that was working was pretty darn awesome. And I thought that was a great effect to have. And again, just making you realize here we are in a starship and systems are down, but we still have to do the job.
Yeah, I love the scene. The fact that they would like fall up against the wall and then fall up against the ceiling and fall to the other wall. And the fight scene was cool. It also, by the way, it lends a bit of credence to the fact that they could actually beat Leland at this point in a fist fight. Because up to this point, they've shown us that Leland is basically impervious to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So by the gravity being lost, it actually gives a plausible reason why he can't fight back as well.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It kind of evens the odds a bit. So I thought it was very well timed and a good decision by the writers to put that in to make it more believable.
Yeah. Anything else?
About the battle itself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
No.
Yes.
No.
It's here. So when they show up, Georgiou says, "You're outnumbered. We have over 200 ships to your 31. And he goes, "You should count again." Awesome lines. They were delivered well. How does she not know that they exist? She was on the ship.
Well, Leland, with his advanced technology and the amount of sphere data. Remember, he had like 54%. He was able to advance the technology and get these drones. They were, because all of the other ships, remember, they scan and they're like, there's only one life signal and the rest are drones.
No. Yeah. The other 31 are being piloted by the computer. Okay.
Yeah.
I can buy that.
Right.
The 30 of them. What about all the ships that came off the ship he was piloting?
Yeah. Those were all
pilot. They didn't exist. Georgiou would have known they existed before this. It wasn't enough time for him to create 250 drones.
You know how when Data says, when he was dating that girl, and they kiss. And she's like, was I even in your thoughts? Or she's like, what were you thinking about? And he's like, oh, I was thinking about, and he lists like a million things. And then one of them was like, did I apply the right pressure on your lips? And she was like, oh, well, I'm glad, I guess I was glad in your thoughts somewhere. Okay. Data can run. He's the best multitasker. So the fact that you say that Leland didn't have any time, he can still be strategizing and da da. But while in the meantime, making drones and making adjustments to the shields and upgrading the technology, he can do it all.
That's great. There's still not enough time to rip the entire hull off of a ship, turn it into drones, and put it back. The problem is not whether he can or cannot make these things. I understand that, yes, he could make a ship built out of drones. The problem is, even with all of his advancements, he cannot do it quick enough that Georgiou wouldn't have known about it.
I think he can.
Anyone else on the bridge could have made that line, and it would have been believable. She's the one person that can't say it. Well, her and Tyler couldn't say it, and they make her say it.
Okay. Nonsense. I think he could have done it.
I don't at all.
Because, okay, so here's a sticking point that totally took me out. So the Enterprise and just have the little drones, totally Star Wars. That's all I could think of when I saw these little drones come out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, out of the back of the ship.
I'm like, what are these Star Wars little robots?
You see, now that part didn't bother me so much because...
What? We already,
because, oh, wait, it bothered me last episode. We already talked about how this was going to happen. So, not us, but I mean the show, had pointed it out when Cornwell said, I picked up the tactical drones, you know, or shuttles, whatever the wording was.
Yeah.
So I'd already gotten over the fact that that doesn't make sense.
Okay. So if the Enterprise can have all these little drones, then Leland can have drones and they can
work.
Yes,
he can.
And he can have a million of them. Well, if he has them and he has a million of them, then they can be cutting out the hole and creating the ships. Ta-da.
Oh, those drones. You're talking about the RD-7s?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even get into that yet. Hold on. Never mind. I was talking about the attack drones. Yeah, the RD-7s, I don't know what R2-D2 is doing here, but... You know what my biggest problem with that is? It's not even that they showed it to us. My biggest problem with that is some of the best scenes throughout the history of Star Trek for me was when someone's out on the hull fixing it and gets hit with something, and then they got to go save them.
Okay.
Well, this negates all that problem now, doesn't it?
I mean, absolutely.
Technologically speaking, that's a great idea. You don't have to put your people at risk.
Yeah.
But these were some of the best scenes.
Yeah. Okay. We have too much other to talk about because that was only one amazing, fantastic, brilliant part. So let's talk about this time loop, this open time loop that we are in. So Michael Burnham goes out to a safe distance, landed on some debris. Spock is with her, and she cannot set the suit to go to the future. And then they finally figure out, oh, well, it's at this point where you need to go be the Red Angel to the previous 5 signals.
Okay, let me get my one little nitpick out of the way because it's very small and it probably had to happen for this all to play out, but it just annoyed me that none of the drones, except for one, break from the battle and go after her. It just seems like they had way too much time on that debris hanging out by themselves.
Okay, but I really do think that Leland thought the sphere data was on Discovery.
No, I do too. I just think that Leland would have been smart enough to know he has to take her out to stop Discovery from going. And then if you take her out, you have more time to get the sphere data. That's how I would have strategized it. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
That was my one little nip. Whatever. It is what it is. You needed the time. You needed the time with Burnham to get through this scene.
Yeah.
So they had to do it this way.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have written it a little differently where there was like a blockade between her and them, but whatever.
Well, in sort of essence, it was because all the shuttlecraft drones, you know, they surrounded her like this, you know.
Yeah, right. But then they like hold back and leave.
So maybe they were the barricade protecting her.
It's possible. It just seemed a little. That
okay.
Part
so we're going to go with that.
That seemed. But again, her. During that scene, by the way, the way she was moving her hands,
Yeah.
Like, it never looked weird. It always looked right. Like, mm-hmm. it was a perfectly choreographed dance for that thing. I love this decision, by the way. I love the fact that she got there and couldn't just jump to the future, because that would have been a huge problem for me if she could. It does not make sense that she can do that without doing the other steps. And a lot of times when people write these kind of time traveling stories, they seem to forget that fact, that in order to get to this point, you have to actually recreate all the steps that led to this point. Mm-hmm. Just because you're in a loop doesn't mean you can negate the ending. If you don't do it, then you change history.
Right. Yeah.
So now, you know, and the way that comes about when Michael's like, Spock, not now. He goes, yes, now. Precisely now.
Yeah. I love that
line.
It was
great.
Yeah. I just thought, what a brilliant way to wrap up the entire season, going back to each of those red signals of, you know, finding Jet Reno and, you know, well, they explain it so well through the episode and that, you know, all those red signals that she created and them seeing the red angel, which again, I loved, was actually Michael Burnham. But to go and just have those memories come through us of each of those previous episodes. I loved it. I thought it was so brilliant. What a great way to wrap up a season, to bring back all the episodes that we've previously seen.
So, okay. So I've been very, very consistent that I didn't want it to be Michael. I still don't really think I want it to be Michael, but whatever. It is what it is now. What I do like about it is they gave you, Spock says it outright, it was both the mother and Michael, right? Because anytime Michael was being saved, like when they were children, that was the mother doing it.
Right.
So that gives plausible reason for why Michael thinks she can do it later. Okay. The hard part about that is the sphere data has her neuro brainwaves, her bio neuro brain patterns. This is obviously not the first loop, right? It's like the fourth or the fifth time this is looping for the sphere, because it wouldn't have had it the first time. So it would have been hard for them to make the suit the first time. I think I would have rather seen that version of the story, but whatever. It is what it is. If we did that, then we wouldn't have had the signals, so it gets all screwy. Mm-hmm. But I did like that fact. I do like that they did give us the wrap-up of all the places they had to go to and the way they spoke about it, and they kind of didn't talk about it in order. You know, because they brought up, I think, Kaminar first, then Reno, which was actually, he says, first you went and to the Hiawatha, but they didn't show them exactly in order at first. Then they ran them back to you with her jumping in and out of them in order.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they sort of ended on one time when they were talking about it, ended with New Eden and Terra Elysium.
Correct.
Yeah. And then so when she was jumping. Yeah. They
jumped through them, I believe, in order, if I remember right.
Except not Terra Elysium, because that was episode 2, New Eden. So they started with the Hiawatha, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right, which is episode 3.
Yeah. So then they did that, but we always knew that because of the previous iteration that they were going to go to New Eden.
They had to come back. And she... You know, just because the signals show up in a certain order doesn't mean she jumps them in that order either.
True.
Because she could jump. I could jump from here to whatever. We'll use us as an example. I could jump from here to when you came over for dinner, right? And then jump from here, then come back to here, then jump back to when I met you on Saturday.
Right.
The red signals I laid out would lay out Saturday to Tuesday, but I really did the jumps the other way around.
Right, because we see time as linear. Whereas correct. Now time is a variable.
Yes. Yeah. She can jump wherever she wants, whenever she wants.
Yeah.
So, which is cool.
So, I wanted to talk about that because the whole start of Spock going insane was because he saw, and I don't know if saw is the right word, but he saw the red signals. He had the map every single time during the season when they would show the map, there were 7 red signals. Now, first of all, how did Spock see them? Like, I don't understand. And then they have this map. Is this just the map that Spock saw? And the map obviously can't be time sensitive because those red signals did not happen all at once.
No, I believe that when he tried to mind meld with Burnham's mother, because I believe it was Burnham's mother that went back, because it was when she went to go save Burnham, right? So when he tried to mind meld with the Red Angel, he part of him broke from time and was able to see all seven at once.
And that was before he went mad?
Yeah, he tried to mind meld when he was like a kid or something.
Oh. Okay. All right, I'll buy that.
So, right. So now part of him, because he now like, they were working on the idea of like a Katra, which doesn't really fit here, but when he tries to mind meld, I believe he broke from time. That's why he had trouble mind melding, because of her being from tethered 950 years in the future.
Uh-huh.
Or what now is actually like 935 years in the future from when he did it. And because of that, now he was seeing things out of perspective, time perspective, let's say. And one of those things is that all seven pop up to him, locations, not times.
Okay.
But he sees them together.
Okay. I'll buy that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my headcanon for it. They don't really explain it.
Yeah. But still, brilliant. I liked, the whole idea of it. So let's talk about our non-Michael Burnham characters. Okay. Let's just jump straight into it. Culber and Stamets.
Finally.
Okay. So did you like that scene with Culber?
Yes, I did a lot.
Okay.
Because I've been waiting for it all series. I mean, all season.
Yeah.
Since he came back. And I think he finally figured out who he is. I think he finally knows himself now. And that's what they were really getting at. They were using the vehicle of his relationship with Stamets. But didn't we kind of know that until he got to that point, he really wasn't back to his old self? He was this new version of him. And now he's more closely aligned with the original version of him.
Right. And I've seen some criticism out there that they didn't like that and why all of a sudden, quote unquote, that he's making this choice. And I'm like, this was not all of a sudden. We have been dealing with this all season, which I think is great. We saw Culber come out from the Mycelium Network and not knew who he is. He wasn't even a doctor for so long. He didn't know what he was doing. And having the little mini counseling session with Admiral Cornwell and saying, you've just got to walk your path. And him moving out of Stamets' quarters and him sort of ignoring him in the mess hall and him figuring out. And we got to see this. I mean, granted, it wasn't all soap opera and we didn't get to see every single minute of it, but we saw this progression. And then last episode when he came down to Stamets in engineering and, they were going to have a conversation, but then Stamets was like, I get where you are and, you do your thing, I'll do mine. But you can see that Culber didn't want to say that. He wanted to start and bridge that gap. So then in this episode, we get Stamets critically injured. I mean, very injured. And I think, gave Culber the chance to just unload and say, this is, and the wording was so beautiful. I've tried to find my way and my way always comes back to you. I'm totally paraphrasing. And, you're where I want to be and we can do this together. I just thought it was beautiful and we got to see enough of it throughout the season that I didn't feel surprised by it. We got to see the struggle. So I don't think that he is the same, but he's back to being functional and back to starting his life with Stamets, wherever that may take them.
Okay. So I think if you believe this came out of nowhere, you're a little off base, and I think you got tricked by the last episode, personally. So, and what I mean by that is, I can kind of see where they're coming from, because in the last episode, he was going to join when the Enterprise gets here, I'm going to join the Enterprise.
Right.
Okay, fine. But you're then kind of ignoring everything that happened before that. You're ignoring the conversation with Cornwell where he has to walk his path. You're ignoring the fact that when Giorgio tried to hit on Stamets, you got he got jealous. You're ignoring a lot of instances leading up to this. And the fact that Stamets almost dies is the straw that breaks the camel's back for him. He realizes, oh, wow, I really can't move on. Like, I liken this to the Enterprise show because in their trip, has a near-death experience, so it's a little different. Trip almost dies, and because of that, he loses it because T'Pol isn't giving him the emotions that he was looking for, mm-hmm. right? This is kind of the reverse of that story,
right.
Where now he sees someone that he loves almost die, and he can't handle it, right? You know what I mean? Like, he knows he's so overcome with emotion that obviously me just running away isn't going to work. I was trying to run away because I was confused and I loved him, but I didn't love him and I don't know how I feel and I know how I feel. So if I just leave, that stops all that. But now, because this happened, he knows he can't just up and leave. And so I don't think this came out of nowhere at all. I think it's been very well built and I think the writers did a phenomenal job of getting us here. I just think that if you believe it came out of nowhere, you focused far too much on the I'm going to the Enterprise and not enough on the rest of the story that happened from the moment he came out of the mycelial network.
Right. The signals, if you will, that he was going through.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've said it on this podcast 100 times. I don't believe any way, shape, or form this season was ending without them together. Now, okay, they're not technically together because Stamets isn't talking. But, I mean, that's where we got, right?
Yeah.
We got back to them together.
Yeah.
We just have to hear Stamets say it now.
Right.
Which I assume is going to happen.
Yeah. So, what do you think about, and I'm very interested to know, the death of Admiral Cornwell?
We're finally going to get a death?
Oh,
like
my
a real
gosh.
One? The one that matters?
Stop.
Or are we going to jump
Did
back
it
and
matter?
Fix all this?
Did it matter is the question.
No. So for the writers, it matters because it now shows the viewer that they're willing to kill off an important character. She is an important character. She's played a big role over the last 2 seasons, even though she's not technically on any of the ships, you know, mm-hmm. like full time. So I think that matters. I think it matters that she died. I don't think she necessarily had to, but there were plenty of ways to fix this problem without someone dying.
Like transport her out.
Forget that. Let's go even simpler, right? You have drones on the edge on the ship fixing the ship. Send one in.
I didn't even think about that.
So, right. Now, if you never showed me that, then you can argue, well, we didn't have time for it to pull and transport and whatever. You could come up with some techno babble as to why that wouldn't work with the blast shield down, right? Just say that the door is shielded, whatever. But you could have sent in a drone and pulled the lever.
I was also very impressed that torpedo, which we know are amazingly strong, with her just pulling the lever and closing the door, that Pike was safe and able to watch the whole thing through the window and not be hurt at all. Like, that's some powerful shielding. I was impressed.
Yeah.
Don't know if I buy it, but I was impressed.
No, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
You can't have a bunch of scenes talking about all these decks being destroyed by torpedoes and then blow one up in a room and act like it only affects the room.
And that you're just standing right on the other side of the wall.
Right. I mean, so what you're telling me is, by that, you're telling me that Starfleet is never prepared for war because apparently they never go into battle and close blast shields, blast doors. So they just run around with all doors open so people can run around the ship. I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, I'm sad to lose Jane Brooke. She's a great actress. I love seeing her. Sad to see her go.
Yeah, I'm not happy that she's gone, but I'm happy that
death.
They were willing to write in the death, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're showing you that they're willing to just wipe out characters.
Yeah.
And ones that have been somewhat vitally important from the beginning, which to this point, we really have not seen. We haven't. We've seen some ancillary characters go, but, mm-hmm. you know, we have the whole Tyler death scene from Broadway that doesn't actually exist because he's fine. And
Leland! You know,
we had Cornwell get her neck broken, but that didn't really happen. That was just for show. You know, we did kill off Giorgio, but brought her back from the Mirror Universe so that the actress could be on the show. So, but this time, we have a death that seemingly is permanent, right? I mean, the only way to make this unpermanent is for to them to jump back before the events and start over.
Yeah, which they won't.
Oh, we never know what they'll do.
Stop. And then I just, again, need to say goodbye to Pike. We got that lovely scene last week with them all, eyes on Pike. To me, it was very touching. I appreciated it. And he got to say his goodbye to, you know, the Discovery family. And we get to hear him say his goodbyes again as they go into the future. And he says, you know, goodbye, my friends, my family. And just the look on his face. And, oh, it's the last time we're going to see Anson Mount. And I'm so, so sad about it. And he did such a great job. I'm glad we had two goodbyes with Captain Pike.
I like this one better than the last one.
Really? I really like the last one.
I said it in the last podcast, which only released like yesterday. Sorry. But I'm just so, we just saw that goodbye too many times for too many characters, and it should have been saved for him. And because it wasn't, it lost impact for me. It is what it is. At least this time felt more natural.
Yes.
Although I think Chris Abusio is right. I believe these episodes were recorded out of order.
Oh, they definitely were.
And I believe, because Chris brought it up, and I didn't think about it before, I believe that the very last scene they filmed was Pike's speech from last episode.
Oh.
Because it did feel like that was his goodbye to the show, too, not just a storyline goodbye.
Oh, yeah, and I see what you're saying.
So, and Chris brought that up, and I kind of agree with him. It felt like he was saying goodbye to the cast, not just the crew.
Right, yeah.
I did like this goodbye. I did like these scenes. There's something that happens at the end of it that drives me crazy, but I did enjoy it.
Okay. Well, let's get to Michael jumping finally. So she closed the time loop and did her five signals. And I thought it was so great how she realized, well, the sixth signal is going to be me leading the Discovery in. She's going to be the signal that they follow. And then the seventh signal will be her getting to the other side and reassuring Spock and everyone else that, yes, she made it okay. Everyone's good. 930 years in the future. I just loved that because I was worried, especially because I wanted at the beginning of the season, I wanted to go to each one of these signals and investigate them like we did with New Eden. And so to not have the final two until the very end, I thought was just, that was a big tease for me and I appreciated it.
I almost agree with you.
Okay.
I don't want number seven. Let me rephrase. I didn't want it here. So they made too much about keep saying five, six, five. This is signal five. This is signal six. They should have tried to avoid saying it too many times so that at the end, if you weren't really paying attention, you had to go back and be like, all right, that's one, that's two, that's three, that's four, that's five, that's wait, where's seven? Where's seven? And the show should have ended without showing you seven.
I think they could have shown it, but then not had the words to explain it.
They could have, but I wanted to not even see it. Don't even see it because, all right, so all right, I'll get into it now. I believe that next year, and I think this is great writing, and I think this is going to be a great story. I just think that they lost their impact if they do it now because of the way they ended this season. That next year, we are going to pick up with the Discovery 950 years in the future. And we're going to see the Discovery and her crew, right, in the future with the Discovery flying around with no technology, which that has a whole other set of issues with it. But so it's going to kind of be Voyager-ish, which I also got from Chris Abusio, so I'll give credit where credit's due, because I think that's where we're headed. And for at least a couple episodes, we're going to be stuck in the future with really kind of nothing to do, right, except try and find your way home. And they're going to be trying to figure out how to get the crystal to get them back. Well, unfortunately, because they show you the seventh signal, we know they find out a way to get that crystal to get them back.
Is this one of those timey-wimey things?
No, well, maybe, but here's the problem. We know she jumps through before she sets the seventh signal. We know that.
Oh, so right? You're so saying once she gets there, she does a time jump
back to set a seventh signal
57,000 light years away.
Correct.
True.
So they should never have shown you the seventh signal, because now we know she can jump through time again.
True.
They should have let us sit this summer off without knowledge of whether she does make it back to this time or not at all.
Huh.
Now, I do believe eventually they're going to leave Discovery there 950 years in the future, and that the crew is going to find its way back. There's a few reasons to that. One, we know there's a Section 31 show, and Georgiou's on that ship.
Yeah.
Right? So she has to come back, because I don't think it's going to be a Section 31 show from 950 years from now. Right. Or they're going to have to write Georgiou off because Tyler's the head of Section 31.
Yeah. Well, and plus we know, Calypso, where the Discovery, and you're right, that totally makes sense. So now that, yeah, it's going to be next season. I guess we're getting to our predictions of what we'd like to see.
Well, the seventh signal just kind of flows right into it, so.
Yeah, totally. So they're going to find a way to bring the crew back, but leave Discovery there.
I believe so now. Now, I didn't think they were going to do that, and I still don't buy it that Michael is gone. I just don't. I don't believe that the crew is gone either.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because they did such a great job of getting Spock back on the Enterprise so that you don't have that problem, right?
Yes, yes.
Because if Spock goes, now you know it has to come back, because Spock's in TOS, and whether people like it or not, certain things have got to continue to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? Or they have to go back later and tell you, well, this was a different timeline, and that would be obnoxious. To find out that we have another split in the timeline. So, we knew Spock had to get back on the Enterprise. So, they left him back behind. Great. Awesome. Thank you. Because now I don't have to worry about that. But then you leave Georgiou on the ship, which screws that whole, all the work you just did with Spock up. Here's my problem. Spock gives, no one's ever going to talk about Discovery again, right?
Great. Right.
Spock gets, and this is where the writers, I think they're trying to appease too many groups. And I've said this earlier. They don't want to piss anyone off. Come on, guys. Just piss people off. By not wanting to piss people off, you're pissing people off anyway. So write the story right and piss people off. Spock says that the parents will never talk about Michael again, and no one will ever bring up her name or the crew or the Discovery or anything. Then you see the scene where they're all lying about what happened to Discovery, which was pretty cool. She blew up. No, I saw her blow up. Nope, she blew up. Everyone knows they're full of it, but whatever. They can't prove it. So Discovery blew up. But we know that they're going to come back. We know Michael's coming back. So how does no one ever talk about her again? They should have left that out.
Maybe they come back, but not in that century.
No, because you still need Georgiou to come back to this time.
You do not know that Section 31 is in the 23rd century.
So Tyler's going to be on the show and not...
Who said Tyler was on it?
On the show?
We only know it's Michelle Yeoh.
Okay.
Everyone is thinking Tyler. Yeah.
I thought Tyler was announced. That's my fault.
Maybe they're going to do a Section 31 in DS9 in the 24th century.
It's possible. But so my problem is, okay, so now let's just take that a step farther. If that happens, that's great. But good. And then you'll piss people off too, because people want them to come back to this time. And I'm fine with that. I'm okay. I wouldn't be pissed off. I'd be happy. But if they do come back, right, to this timeline, say she makes it back because we can tell she already can. If they do, then when you do eventually write the story that is the reason why we never heard of Michael, which they're going to do because they're so worried about people being upset that you never heard of her before, that they keep trying to write explanations for why you never heard of her, it's going to feel forced and unreal because we already had one story. They should have just left that, in my opinion, they left that out. They should have talked about why they don't talk about Discovery. And moved on.
Yeah, I think that would have been best, is to not talk about Discovery. But yeah, we didn't need to not talk about Michael. However, it felt very tied up in a bow, and I didn't feel like I needed that as a viewer. Maybe some people did because they were so crazy. We've never heard about this. You know what?
But then wait till the end. That's my point. Like,
yeah.
I think we're still going to end up there where we don't ever talk about Michael again, right? But let's just say this show goes on for five more seasons. We'll use the number seven because that's a special number for most series. But at the end of seven, they're still going to have to write why we don't talk about her. So now we're going to have another reason why we don't talk about her? Come on. You should have just left it for that season. And again, just piss those fans off. I'm sorry. Sorry, fans. I know there's some of you that really can't stand that we don't ever talk about these things again. And you don't even buy this excuse either. So whatever. If you're not going to buy this one either, then who cares?
Yeah, that's my thing too, because I was on record on the main show saying I didn't want to see Spock. Like, I want my Star Trek universe to expand. So the fact that we are talking about a ship that we've never heard and that we've never talked about these characters, bring it, baby. That's what I want. We didn't know about Picard. Well, I guess that's in the future, but like...
Right. Well, that's why that works. And I think, to be honest...
I love it. Build the universe.
As good as the show has been and what it's done, I think that the writers are really fighting with four issues, right? Because typically in a Star Trek show, let's just say you did place this show after Deep Space Nine or after the movies, right? That you would be dealing with continuity, right? And new. That's what you'd be dealing with. But the continuity would all be stuff that already happened. So you just have to reference it.
Right.
You know? The problem they're having is they're dealing with continuity before and after, mm-hmm. because they're dealing with Enterprise and TOS, plus TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, all the movies. So they have to worry about that, and they're trying to bring in new. And by bringing in new, they are doing things that probably should be happening after DS9 now, which I'm okay with. I've said it a million times. It's 2019. The show should not look like it's from the 60s. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I just think that when the writers do this, they're having a hard time of putting them together. They're only doing continuity or new. They're not doing continuity with new, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So I think that's one of the biggest problems, and that's one of the reasons why people can't get over the fact that it's a prequel, because mm-hmm. it's also a sequel at the same time,
right.
which makes it harder than just doing a regular prequel. Enterprise was easier, because you just chop down warp to 5, you make technology kind of garbagey, and you move on. You can bring in new races. All right, you never heard of some of these, but whatever. You had plenty of things to work with, you know, and they said it so far in the future that there's reasonable reason for things to disappear from memory or common talk.
Right.
Whereas this happens right before TOS, which I think is part of the problem for some fans, that, well, because this happened so close, the Enterprise should definitely be talking about it. It's just like with they did it in the last episode with the holograms. I don't care whether there's holograms or not. Mm-hmm. I really don't. They're cool. They couldn't make them in 1966, so they didn't have them. But Can the writers stop telling us why they don't exist in TOS?
Yeah.
You're bringing more attention to it than I care to listen to. And ask any listener of this show. I'm one of the most critical people of this show. And so I get there's people who are way more critical than me that are on the boards and everywhere else talking about it. I understand that. But I'm fairly critical of the show. Stop doing it. Stop pointing out these issues with your continuity that make me think about them again. Because I've already ignored it and accepted it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, I don't care. Move on.
Right. It's just, look, certain things are just part of the times. When a show is made in 1960, it's going to be different than a show made in 2019. It's mm-hmm. just a fact of life. Now, we could debate forever whether it should have been a prequel, a sequel, or whatever. They decide to go with a prequel. It's going to look different. They did a great job of making the Enterprise Bridge look like it felt right for the Enterprise we've seen in TOS. Was it updated? Of course it was updated. It would look ridiculous if it looked the same.
Mm-hmm.
But for the writers to try, this is what I mean. They're trying so hard not to make anyone mad. They're making people mad.
Yeah. Real quick, you did talk about, and as you were talking about the TOS bridge, I did want to just say, when I did postcards last week, I was commenting how the TOS bridge, it didn't have a connection to me. But this episode, I felt it more when I saw the scenes and them, you know, getting thrown and landing on the safety bars or whatever they're called, you know,
the console.
Yeah. The consoles and stuff like that. It felt like the original series. So I just wanted to be on record to say it took me a little longer, but now I feel it. So stop sending me hate messages.
Now you're trying not to piss anybody off.
No, but it did. It just, I was watching it. I was like, man, that bridge looks so good. I really appreciated it this episode, but not previously.
Fair enough. I mean, I liked it both times, so it didn't really bother me. It did have a very TOS feel, the way they were being thrown around the bridge, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Which was cool.
Yeah.
Which, also, they carried that into TNG, too, right? I mean,
oh, totally.
You'd see a panel blow up and a guy go flying halfway across the bridge for some reason. Like his ejector seats.
Exactly. Oh, and I did love when clean-shaven Spock came on board with his uniform and then goes to sit at his science station. And we had the blue circle diagram on his console. That was total TOS. I loved that.
Yeah, well, and also he walks over and it has the little thing that he would look through.
Yeah, the viewer.
That was, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just I'm used to seeing him with a beard all season.
Oh.
It looked weird to me. He looked, and his ears seem to stand out way more now.
Way more. I was like, I don't think Leonard Nimoy's were that big of ears, but yeah. Whatever. It's reimagined. I don't think
his ears were that big of ears all season.
Like, well, he had that moppy hair and stuff, so.
It just seems so weird. They stood out so much.
I wonder if they did change the ears. We should tweet at Ethan Peck.
We should, because it did look weird.
Yeah.
So, but another thing that they focused on that was weird to me, but I liked, was I'm going way back now. Every time they showed Poe, they showed her eyes blink.
Yes, I did notice that too.
So the first episode, I was like, that's awesome. By the time we were seeing it here, I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah. Like, I get it. They blinked the wrong way. I get it.
Yep, it was every single time. I noticed that too.
And I even said to my wife, I'm like, nobody blinks this much. Why does she blink that much?
Right. Oh, and I was watching, and there was quite a few lens flares, but was wondering if you noticed it this episode or not, if it bugged you as much. No,
I didn't. I noticed a lot of spinning, but I didn't notice the flares.
Well, glad that we're noticing what each other annoys, gets annoyed at.
But real quick, what do you think of the, now going back to how we started this Seventh Signal thing, what do you think of the idea of like a Voyager-esque discovery?
I think it's great. I think it's going to be way super fun to see them doing new so far in the future. Like that's going to be, and I'm sure a lot of fans are going to be hating, that wouldn't happen, blah, blah, blah. But I like sort of that feel, like you said, with Voyager, of them trying to get back while leaving Discovery there because we know of Calypso.
Yeah, and the only problem I have with it all is they tell us that all sentient life is destroyed and that there's no technology, right? That was the whole point. They have to get past the point of technology. Except that Calypso happens 1,000 years from then, which clearly has people and technology.
Yeah, that's a little weird. See, I think it's Jillian's timeline that's what happens.
I don't think there's splits in the timeline.
They are.
No, they've never told us that these timelines are split. What they explained to us is that the timeline is ever changing and you're still on the same timeline.
Okay.
So did all of what we just did negate Calypso? No, because it was the whole point of Calypso was to show you where this was going to end up.
Right. But I think that was... I don't know.
She's going to see her mother again, which is awesome because I love the actress.
Oh, I know, right? Sonya Sohn. Can't wait to see her. Hopefully we get to see her.
We'll see her. We better see her. See? They're going to piss me off if they don't.
Well, and Jillian makes it so clear that no matter what she does, all sentient life is going to be destroyed and she's the only one.
And this is my problem with the writing. They made everything so clear. They've never left themselves any wiggle room. Even with all their massive contradictions throughout the two seasons, they kind of just expect us to accept it. And I get it. A lot of viewers do. They do. And they can find reasons in their head canon or just tell me I'm wrong or just don't care. But for some viewers, that is the point. More to me, it is don't contradict yourself or just leave yourself a tiny, insy-bitsy little bit of wiggle room, right? Like this Seventh Signal issue that I have. I don't want to see it now because I want in my head to believe there's a possibility they can't get back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't really believe it. But now there's next season, if they do what I think they're going to do and they do the Voyager type thing, trying to get back, it lost a lot of impact because in my head, I already know they're coming back.
Yeah.
The drama is gone, in my opinion. Now, can they fix that with other drama? Of course they can. For instance, next season, in the first, let's say, 6 episodes, let's say they get back in the 6th episode, they shouldn't have shown us the Seventh Signal until, like, I don't know, episode 4.
Right.
5 maybe. And so you sign on Pike, you know, Anson Mount for like 3 episodes next year, and you just, you know, kind of sprinkle him into those first couple episodes, and then eventually they have that exact same scene in episode 4 or 5 next year. That leaves the drama to that point.
Yeah. They wouldn't even need to sign him on because they could just, you know,
film it
clip
now.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, they could film it now.
Right.
They might still do that, but they'll just be giving us the stuff we already saw. They just had to not show us that scene.
Yeah.
And so, but now we move forward, right? And let's say, you know, the drama's gone for me because I just assume they're coming. But one of the things they could do is they could actually find a planet that wasn't destroyed. And that solves the problem of Calypso. If there's one planet with sentient life still on it, you can repopulate the universe. 1,000 years is probably not enough, but, you know, anything's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the problem is they write themselves into a corner where they guarantee things.
Right. The absolute statements.
Right. Stop with the absolutes.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
That could, however, hey, I could be completely wrong. That could be part of, you know, we might look back in 5 years and realize that they did all these absolutes and contradict themselves on purpose. That the reason for it is everyone in society today, because we don't really talk about the societal effects of these shows or the effects from society on these shows, that everyone, go into any political debate today and everything's an absolute.
True.
And almost everyone's wrong because it's an absolute.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah, I talked myself into that one.
Yeah.
But we don't really, like, you know, when we look at episodes from other series, because they're one-offs, everything's a one-off, it's very easy to see what they were saying about society.
Mm-hmm.
This being a larger issue, the absolutes might be part of that discussion, and we're just missing it, you know, over the overall story.
We are. Patrick, I bow down to your wisdom.
Do I get the mic drop this time?
Yes. Mic drop. Wow.
I don't know where to go from there.
I know, right? With all of the amazing things that went on for this episode and wrapping up the season, like, I just think that it was, to me, a very solid season closure. I actually like it better than season one finale. I just really feel like it had the closure. We got to go and recap through the season. The special effects were amazing. And I love the character development that we got to see. But yeah, the whole timey-wimey time loop, seventh signal, is hard for me to get my head to wrap around. And I like the possibility of where it's going. I think with season one, when we saw 1701, we all knew it was 1701, like that course was clear. Whereas now I think it's still up in the air as to what next season is going to be about. I think these two seasons flow very well together. And like you were saying, like this serialized nature, like season one and season two fit very well together. And so I'm wondering if season three, like, we're going to get a break and see it as something different. It might be interesting.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I actually like season two better than season one. I enjoyed season one, but I enjoyed season two better. I felt there was actually more character development, if that was possible. And my only issue is they do like too much to wrap things in a tight bow at the end of the seasons. And they did it with the first one where they showed us the NCC 1701, where they could have done that, you know, one episode later. And they did it here again with the seventh signal.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how they'll never talk about Michael Burnham ever again in the right. history of ever. They just, they want too much to finish that story. But don't they know they're coming back for season three? Like, haven't they already been signed? So you don't need to do that then. If you didn't know, I get it. If you were unsure of whether you were coming back or not, okay, I get it. But you do know you're coming back. So just wait and write it then, in my opinion. I did like the way the story flowed. I loved the character development. And I really enjoyed the second part more than the first part of this two-parter, too.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bring up, so I'll bring it up in my final thoughts. There's a scene where in the middle of the battle, Pike, because I told you I was going to say where he's going to get credit where he doesn't deserve it, and here it comes. Pike says, get between the ships and Discovery, because he was going to take the brunt of the Force, right, to save the Discovery so the Discovery can make it through. The Discovery got peppered after he tried to do that. It was getting hit worse when he was trying to save them than when before he went and stepped in the middle.
I didn't think that was before, because when they were saying, and they're like, oh, our shields are down to 42%, but Discoveries are down to 38%. Like, then they stepped in.
Yes. And then if you watch the very same, the next scene, Discovery's getting lit across the bow.
Yeah, but that's because totally they're surrounded.
Destroyed. Yeah, but it just didn't work.
And
like he was making this heroic move. And it didn't work. It just didn't work. They both got annihilated at that moment.
Well, and okay, so now that you bring it up.
I'm just picking on Pike. It's not that big of a deal. I'm just picking on Pike.
But that strategy only works in two dimensions. Like, how do you get in between? If you're in a sphere and everything's coming at you and you're getting in between, well, what about all the other?
That's the problem with the strategy. It's just,
you know, 359 degrees.
Right. Right. Even if you're a large ship, it's 340, okay, you know, at best.
Yeah.
So,
That's why they were still getting hit, because you just can't cover every angle. I understand that.
Yeah. It's just when he declared it, it was like, yes, he's going to save the... Oh, man, they're getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't work, you know? Like, he should have sent the drones to sit in the middle or something.
Right.
So, but I've noticed, and I try not to follow, you know, social media and stuff afterwards. Mm-hmm. But everyone was pointing out how heroic of a thing it was for him to save the Discovery. He didn't really do that.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah, so, okay.
The Discovery was still getting peppered.
That's why I was like, I didn't give him credit for that.
You didn't. I assumed it was going to come up in here somewhere, but it didn't. So now I'm adding it into my final thoughts here.
Got it.
So, it was a great effort. A for effort. I mean, but it just didn't work. And it still gets through, so it was cool.
Well, he is the best captain. Let's, you know, be clear about that. So
I'm calling Picard.
No, according to Cornwell. That's not according to Amy Nelson.
Now I'm calling Pike, telling on you.
Well, it's been fun talking about this season 2 finale, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2. But it isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
But I don't know, like that one, as I was looking through the examples, I was like, that's pretty badass to just take that risk. And I think Riker's taken it back. He's like, you're going to kill Deanna? No, don't do that. But I think she convinces him, like, this is the way we have to do it. So I don't know. What do you think?
Wow, that was not even on my radar.
Well, of course, it's killing
I
Troy.
I know, yeah. You know?
Literary Treks.
It always frustrated me because on screen, we saw in depth the Klingon government, the Bajoran government, the Cardassian government, to a lesser extent, the Romulan government. We almost never saw the Federation government. You know, three times we saw a president. Once we saw the council. The council was mentioned any number of times, but we never really saw it.
Warp 5.
I thought it was cool when he hits it. And it's like knocking wood on a door.
So did they install like a wooden neck for him or something?
Right. It doesn't make any sense. You know what? I leave that up to, I guess, people had less knowledge of biology overall, you know, the general public in 1939. So, yeah. Whatever.
We're going to file that under, we just got to go with it, and we'll file that under our neck cannon.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Melodic Treks.
Star Trek 3 was Christopher Lloyd's crew, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, his impact on that culture and race of Klingons and the rest of the franchise is still being felt. And to me, he's my second favorite Star Trek movie villain, right? Khan would obviously be first, and then Krug is number two after that for me.
Not the whale probe?
Is the whale probe just misunderstood.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
And listeners, because I am still on vacation, we are giving you one more week to leave us an iTunes star rating and written review. Get that written review in. We've had lots already. We are going to be ready to draw names. Again, this is for a Captain Pike fan sets pin. It's beautiful. Please leave us that review, and we will be drawing names next week on the Edge main show. And so you can see if you are a winner, winner, chicken dinner.
And I have some more info. You don't get to show that thing to me anymore and taunt me with the fact that I don't have one. Chris Tribuzio just sent me one today.
I love Chris Tribuzio. Yay.
So do I. So now we both have one.
Okay. No more taunting.
Yes. You don't get to rub it in my face anymore that you have a great pen and I don't.
Well, listeners, I won't be taunting you if you are the winner. So,
so get those reviews in, guys, because it's a great pen.
And if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send a show and select the Edge. That will come right to Amy. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Amy, where can people find you when you're not walking among the stars at the planetarium in New York?
Aww. And you can find me here on the network. Now, listeners, we are going to have one more episode of Postcards. We're going to do a Postcards Season 2 wrap-up. There, I encourage you all to listen. I'll be making a special announcement. And we will have a special guest. The one and only Chris Jones will be joining me for that. So you can find me doing Postcards from the Edge here on the network. I also co-host Earl Grey, which is about Star Trek The Next Generation with Justin and Richard. I'm also on the Fandom Podcast Network doing Discoville, and that is about the Orville and Discovery, where we get to talk about both of those shows. And I am co-hosting that with Haley Stoddart, Kyle Wagner, and Kevin Reitzel. You can find me on Twitter, where I just tweeted all about my New York City adventures, and that is on at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place right there in the Babel Conference, so you can find me there. So, Patrick, where can people reach you when you're not closing a time loop in your life?
Well, when I'm not doing that, and I feel like I must because this kitchen is still not done.
It's coming along so nicely, though. So beautiful. Thank you.
My fridge is still in the middle of my living room.
Oh, my gosh.
When I'm not doing that, you can find me eating Junior's cheesecake because I still have some of that left. Oh. You can also, yeah,
oh,
it's a big cake.
I just finished my mud pie that you made me.
Oh, did you like it?
Yes, I love it. It was a great dessert. Thank you.
Good. We call it dino dirt.
Yes.
When I'm not doing any of those things, you can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. There's no spaces. The five is a digit. You can also find me on the Babel Conference from time to time, popping in and out to talk with the listeners and exchange some ideas. And you can definitely find me on Warp 5 every other week with my good friend Brandon.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, which we're going to be coming up with some, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd also like to thank our tactical shuttlecrafts, our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoeb Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millett, Chris Abusio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Edge.
Thank you for listening. And join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge. Wait for it. Of Federation Space. Oh, so I wanted to talk about Georgiou. It was so cool when she locked Leland into the spore drive container, where, of course, I was glad he didn't break out because the tardigrade and that mean Ripper couldn't even break out. But anyways, so I was like, man, Georgiou is creating her own agonizer booth in the Prime universe. I thought that was pretty cool. Sort of a callback to the Mirror universe.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And I like you said, that he couldn't break out because he's punching it. He was able to break it, though. So he's clearly stronger than than Ripper was. But, I mean, I guess that makes sense because he's part robot at this point.
Yeah, right.
So the way he died was cool, too. Like, he actually, like, decomposed in front of us.
Yeah, I didn't know if I liked that because, like, when he fell down, it sort of made this thud. And I'm like, no, all your little magnetized, it's supposed to fall apart. Why would it be thud?
No, we'll see that. And that's a question because it's still his body. The nanobots are inside of him, but he's still outer shell. Is still actual Leland.
Yeah, still bio.
So that should make a thud sound. And I thought it was great. We didn't even bring this up, but when Saru says you're going to see a human on the screen, but yes. I promise you it's not a human. Yes. Awesome scene.
Oh, I know. That was really good. Because he like held up his finger. It's like, don't put it through yet. Wait. Oh, yep. Yeah. Very commanding. Oh, we didn't even talk about. So is Saru captain? He's in the captain's chair.
He is as of right now. But I mean, they never really said if it's permanent.
And then what did you think about the effect of smearing their face as they went through the time?
I thought it was cool. I thought it lasted a little long.
It was a little long, but I loved that scene was all focused on the captain's chair where Saru was sitting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So I'm going Saru.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why we got the story from him we got this year to make him captain. So I definitely think that's the case.
Yeah. And his arc over it was just him stepping up each and every time and him making more command decisions more confidently was great.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay, let's let the listeners go. We've talked way too long.
Yes, we have. We're going to do another episode.
Oh, yeah. We're going on. Let's make it a part two.